a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Phil Dierking. You will also hear part of a conversation with award-winning movie director Steven Spielberg on What It Takes. You can hear the full What It Takes program on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Later, we will have the third part of The Princess of Mars in American Stories. But first, here is Phil Dierking.
Lebanon's first Oscar-nominated movie and a Chilean picture with a transgender actor are among five finalists for Best Foreign Language Film at the 2018 Academy Awards. The winner will receive an Academy Award, also called an Oscar. The 90th Academy Awards ceremony takes place on March 4th in Los Angeles, California. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences presents the Best Foreign Language Film Award to a movie recorded in a language other than English. All the films under consideration were produced in a country other than the United States. Lebanese director Ziad Douaidi's The Insult is competing against four other films, including Chilean filmmaker Sebastian Lelio's A Fantastic Woman. The other finalists are The Square by Swedish director Ruben Östlund, Russian filmmaker Andrei Zvigintsev's Loveless, and On Body and Soul by Hungarian director Ildikó Anyedi. A Fantastic Woman tells about a transgender woman who is rejected by her partner's family after his death. Critics have praised the movie as a major turning point in how transgender people are represented in film. However, the director says he did not set out to make history. Lelio told the Associated Press that he was surprised how timely the film seems. He noted how the movie has made its way from the world of theatrical productions and into the cultural conversation. Lelio said he sees the film as a love story that happens to happen to a transgender woman. For me, it has always been a film about the limits to our empathy, he said, about what we are willing to allow from others, where we draw the line in terms of which people are legitimate or which acts of love are legitimate or not. Paris-based Lebanese director Douaidi said the nomination for The Insult was great news for us and for Lebanon. It's been a very, very long and difficult road to get where we are, he said. In The Insult, an argument between a Lebanese Christian man and a Palestinian refugee leads to a courtroom battle. The film shows examples of ongoing problems within Lebanese society. The film was first shown at the Venice Film Festival, where its Palestinian co-star, Kamel El-Basha, won the Best Actor Award. Douaidi was briefly detained when he returned to Lebanon because he had visited Israel, where his movie The Attack was being filmed. Lebanon and Israel are in a state of war. Lebanon's government bars Lebanese citizens from visiting Israel or having business with Israelis. Making films means crossing borders, said Douaidi. Nobody can tell a director where to film. The director added that he hoped The Insult would show moviegoers a different side of the Middle East than violence and conflict. Yet, with these problems, there is hope of compromise, he said. The nominees for Best Foreign Language Film will come to the Oscars after winning awards at other film competitions. Loveless took the first place at the 2017 London Film Festival. Judges there praised Zvyagintsev for turning the story of one family's problems into a universal tragedy. The Russian director said, "The Academy Award nomination means a lot to filmmakers and helps them continue to tell the stories that move us in a way we want to tell them." Hungarian film On Body and Soul won the Golden Bear Award last year at the Berlin Film Festival. The film, a love story, takes place in a building where animals are killed for their meat. Director Agnetti said the movie tells about two normal people whose lives are brightened by the power of dreams. Agnetti is the only female director among the foreign language finalists. She said getting an Oscar nomination in a year where so many exceptional women are being honored for their work behind the camera humbles me. The Square is a story of a museum director whose well-organized life turns into crisis after a series of strange events. It won the Palme d'Or at the 2017 Cannes Film Festival. Östlund was very happy about the nomination of his film. "I wanted to make an entertaining, wild, and funny movie at the same time," he told the AP from the Sundance Film Festival. I'm Phil Dierking.
Next, here is movie director Steven Spielberg.
Everything I'm about to tell you happened completely by accident. And I think it all started out when I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, and my father came over to me and said, "I'm going to take you to see the greatest show on earth. And when you promise a 6, 7, 8-year-old young boy that you're about to see the greatest show on earth, I couldn't have been more excited." My father explained there were going to be lion tamers and circus acts. There were going to be clowns and trapeze artists. And I was absolutely delighted. And I looked forward to this for a week. On the weekend, we got into the car. We drove to Philadelphia. We lived in New Jersey, in Haddon Township, New Jersey. We drove into Philadelphia, and it was very, very cold. It was wintertime around the holiday season. And we stood in a very long line, I remember, against a solid red brick wall for what seemed like hours. I think we actually stood in line for about 2.5 hours. The line just inched forward. And I didn't quite understand. I was waiting to see the tent, and there was not a tent. There was a brick wall. We walked into some rather large doors, and we walked into a very kind of a dimly lit room. I remember the room had a lot of pink and purple lights, and the ceiling looked like a church. It was a lot of Rococo carvings. There wasn't any kind of iconic, you know, symbology in the room, but it felt like a place of worship, and a little bit like our synagogue, actually. And I still didn't quite understand about the greatest show on earth. And I sat down in some seats, and they were all facing forward, not bleachers, but seats. It was a large red curtain. I'll never forget this. And the curtain opened, the lights went down, and a dimly lit image came on the screen, and it was flickering, and it was kind of grainy because we were sitting way in front. And suddenly, I realized that my father had lied to me and had betrayed me and had taken me to a circus that wasn't a circus. It was a movie about a circus, and I had never seen a movie before. That was the first movie I ever saw, Cecil B. DeMille's The Greatest Show on Earth. I had never seen a motion picture before. I had seen a lot of television because my dad was an electrical engineer, and in his spare time, when he wasn't working for RCA, he was repairing the early television sets of the early 50s. So I knew television, but I didn't know movies. That was my first movie experience. And I think the feeling of disappointment and regret and betrayal lasted only about 10 minutes. And then I became just one more victim of this tremendous drug called cinema. And I was no longer in a theater. I was no longer in a seat. I wasn't aware of the surroundings. It was no longer a church. It was a place of equal devotion and worship, however. I became part of an experience. And I became part of the lives of a lot of people that I never would meet. And I would only get to know in this one story, but that became my life. Now, in the center of this movie, if any of you remember the Cecil B. DeMille film, The Greatest Show on Earth, there's a tremendous train wreck where a train speeding along the tracks is encountered by a car. And the train hits the car. The car flips over the top of the engine. And the train goes off the tracks, and there's a tremendous disaster where all the cars pile up. It was a special effect sequence. Later, I learned it was a miniature train, but it was as real as I've ever seen anything in my life. It was the greatest disaster I ever beheld. And for me, it began my interest, not in making movies, but in asking my dad to get me a Lino electric train. So I went from wanting to become part of this incredible experience to wanting to own my first electric train. And that holiday season, my dad got me my first Lionel engine and a little coal car and a caboose and a few passenger cars. And the next year, I asked for the same thing. I said, I'd like another engine. So I had two trains. And as I got older, I began to collect every year more and more cars and people and semaphores and crossing signals. I became a complete electric train nut. And I had a rather large layout in our, and by this time, by the way, we had moved from New Jersey to Phoenix, Arizona, which by the way, when you're about 12 years old, there is nothing to do in Phoenix, Arizona, nothing at all. So I had a lot of time on my hands, and I was really interested in seeing what it would look like if I could recreate that memory, now several years old, of The Greatest Show on Earth, and could I recreate the train wreck? And I actually took my two trains, and I just rammed them into each other. And they broke, and I told my dad the train had broke, and he said, how did it happen? I said, I rammed them into each other, and my dad had them repaired. And the next week, I crashed my trains into each other again, and the other train broke. And my dad said, look, you know, I'm going to take the train set away. If you crash these things into each other one more time, you're not going to have trains anymore. But there was something about whatever the primal sense of wanting to destroy something because of that movie, whatever got into me, I needed to see those trains crash into each other. And so I also didn't want to lose my train set. My dad had sitting around the house, which I always had taken for granted, this little 8mm Kodak film movie camera with a turret that had three lenses, kind of wide, medium, and close-up lens. I never really bothered with the camera, but I thought, well, I know what I can do. What if I film the trains crashing into each other? I can just watch the film over and over and over again. And that's how I made my first movie. I shot one train, I just all in the camera. I didn't have an editing machine. I just put the camera low to the track, the way we as children like to put our eyes close to the toys we're playing with, so the scale seems to be, the scale seems to be realistic. And I just filmed one train going left to right. I filmed the other train, cut the camera, turn it around. The other train came coming right to left. And intuitively, I figured out if I put the camera in the middle and they met in the middle, I'd have my train wreck. Well, that's exactly what I did. Luckily, the trains didn't break, but I looked at that film over and over and over again. And then I thought, I wonder what else I could do with this camera. And that's how it began. And that's how I became a director. And the first time I sensed that an audience was kind of agreeing with my choice of profession was when I was a Boy Scout, and I went out for the photography merit badge, and I wanted to, and the requirement in the merit badge simply said you have to tell a picture with still photographs. Our still camera broke. I went to the scoutmaster. I said, can I tell a story with our home movie camera? He said yes, to fulfill the requirements for the merit badge. And I made a little Western called Gunsmog, and I made this little Western with my sisters and my friends and my next door neighbors and some of the Boy Scouts. And we just, everybody had cowboy suits because we lived in Arizona, my goodness, you know. And so we all brought our cowboy suits out. And I made this little Western movie and showed it to the Boy Scout troop on a Friday night when we had a meeting. And they went ballistic. They were screaming and clapping and laughing, both with and at the movie. I didn't care. It was a response. And the response set me on fire. It absolutely set me on fire. And I never wanted to live without some kind of affirmation, some kind of collective feedback. And maybe that's why my early movies were all about you. My early movies were all soliciting you, making you my partners, thinking about you behind the camera, thinking what would turn you on, what would get you excited, what would make you laugh, what would make you scream. How could I create suspense out of whole cloth when that darn shark never worked? And you were my partners. My audience, you know, I collaborated with you and you collaborated with me. And I think the beginning of my career, I had this wonderful experience. And the thing I really want to emphasize is I didn't have a choice. When you have a dream and the dream isn't something you dream and then it happens, the dream is something you never knew was going to come into your life. Dreams always come from behind you, not right between your eyes. It sneaks up on you. But when you have a dream, it doesn't often come at you screaming in your face, this is who you are. This is what you must be for the rest of your life. Sometimes a dream almost whispers. And I've always said to my kids, the hardest thing to listen to, your instincts, your human personal intuition, always whispers. It never shouts. Very hard to hear. So you have to, every day of your lives, be ready to hear what whispers in your ear. It very rarely shouts.
Another of the large airships exploded high. Members of the crew fell to the ground. The huge ship lost control and began turning again and again. Soon, it was close to the ground. The warriors climbed aboard the ship and began fighting the members of the crew who were still alive. Soon, the fighting stopped. The warriors began taking everything from the ship. At last, they brought a captive from deep within the ship. Two of the warriors had their captive by each arm. I wanted to see what new and strange form of life this creature would be. As they came near, I saw that it was a woman. She looked like a woman from Earth. She was young. Her skin was a light red, almost a copper color. I saw at once that she was extremely beautiful. She had a fine face with large dark eyes and long black hair. As her guards led her away, she saw me for a moment. She seemed very surprised. Her face looked hopeful. But when I made no attempt to speak to her, her face grew sad, and she looked very small and frightened. As I watched her disappear into a building, I realized that Sola was near me.
John Carter, that woman will be saved for the great games that are held by our people. The games are long and cruel, and end in death for those captured in battle. Her death will be slow and painful. She will die for the enjoyment of all.
Sola's face seemed sad when she said this. I could tell by the way she spoke that she did not like the games and did not want to see the young woman die. She was very different from the rest of her people. Sola, do you not like the games?
No, John Carter. My mother died in the games. That is a secret you must not tell anyone. The wall where Tars Tarkas found you held eggs that produce our young. All the children belong to the tribe. A mother never knows which child is hers when they come out of the egg. My mother hid the egg that carried me. It was not placed within the walled area. She kept her secret until after I was born. But others discovered her secret, and she was condemned to die in the games. She hid me among other children before she was captured. If this secret were learned, I too would die in the games. Before she left me, my mother told me the name of my father. I alone keep that secret. It would mean death for him as well as me. My people are violent and cruel.
The next day I entered the great room where the green Martians held meetings. The red woman prisoner was there too. Soon, the leader of the green Martians came into the room. His name was Lorquas Tomel. He began speaking to the prisoner.
Who are you? And what is your name?
I am the Princess Deja Thoris, daughter of Mors Kajak, the ruler of Helium. Our airship was on a scientific flight. We were to study the air and atmosphere. Without our work, the air on our planet would grow thin and we would all die. Why would you attack us?
As she talked, a warrior ran to her and hit her in the face, knocking her to the ground. He placed a foot on her small body and began laughing. I reached for the small sword I carried and rushed to attack the huge warrior. He was a strong opponent. But again, because of the low gravity on Mars, my strength was far greater than his. In a few short minutes, the green warrior was dead. I helped the young woman to her feet.
Who are you? Why did you risk your life to help me? You look almost the same as my people, but you wear the weapons of a green warrior. Who or what are you?
My name is John Carter. I am from the planet Earth. How I got here is a long story. I attacked that warrior because where I come from, men do not attack women. I will offer you my protection as long as I can. However, I must tell you that I too am a captive.
Come, John Carter, and bring the red woman with you. Let us leave this room quickly before some warrior attempts to stop us.
The three of us quickly returned to the building where I had spent the last several days. Sola then left to prepare food. Wulla sat in the corner and looked at the both of us. The young woman was afraid of poor, ugly Wulla. I told her not to fear him. Wulla is not only my guard, he is my friend. I have treated him with kindness that he has never known. As each day passes, he trusts me more. I now think he would follow any command I give. Sola has told me that all captives are held until they can die in the great games held by the Green Martians. Our only chance to survive is to escape, but we must have Sola's help for our plan to succeed.
Yes, if we stay with the Green Warriors, we will both die. If we are to escape, we will need several of the animals to ride. It will be our only chance.
I have several of the animals. They were given to me when I became a warrior. Sola came back later with food for the two of us. Deja Thoris and I asked for her help. The three of us talked long into the night. At last, Sola gave us her answer.
Your best chance for escape will be in the next 2 days. We will leave this city tomorrow and begin a long trip to the home of our tribe. I will help you escape, but I must come with you. I will be killed if you escape.
Sola, of course you must come with us. You are not cruel or violent, as many of your people are. Help us, and I can promise you a much better life. You will be treated with respect as an honored guest.
The next morning, we rode away from the city on our animals. More than 1,000 animals were carrying the huge tribe of green Martians. Also in the group were one American, one princess of the royal house of Helium, our guard Sola, and poor, ugly Wulla. Late that night, we left the camp. One animal carried me, another Sola and Princess Deja Thoris. Wulla followed close behind. We rode quickly through the Martian night. I looked into the sky and saw Earth across the great distance of space. Since I had met the Princess Deja Thoris, I had not thought once of Earth or home. I knew then that I would never willingly leave her. The next morning, I could see that we were being followed by several hundred of the green warriors. Our animals were very tired. I knew we must stop. I told Sola and the princess to take the stronger of the two animals and ride away. I will hold back the green warriors as long as I can. Wulla, go with them and guard them with your life.
We can't leave you alone. It would be certain death if you are captured again. You must come with us.
Sola took the princess by the arm and lifted her on top of the animal she had chosen. Quickly, she began riding away. For a moment, Wulla looked at me, then turned and ran after them. I took out my rifle from its case. I began firing to slow the green warriors. I was able to slow them for more than an hour, but then I had no more ammunition. Soon, I was surrounded. A green warrior got off his animal and came toward me. He pulled out his long, thin sword. I reached for mine. As we neared each other, I saw it was Tars Tarkas. He stopped and spoke to me very slowly.
You will die here today, John Carter. It is I who must kill you. Know that I will take no pleasure in your death.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
from Washington, this is VOA News.